What the EFL? It's the Independent Football League podcast. Once a week, we'll run you through all the whys and why nots from across the Football League. On this episode, Blades slice Burnley, Preston push for the playoffs, Crewe do the managerial shuffle, the fit and proper guest test is in safe hands, we've got scouting reports and a ruined jumper in Rotherham. Once a week, every week, wherever you get your pods, this is What the EFL. Here we are then, listener, ready again to talk you through what happened this past weekend in the Football League. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, joined every week by my two friends, Adrian Clark and Sam Parkin. How are you doing, chaps?
Hello. Very good. Thank you.
Hello, Matt. Doing well. Thank you.
Busy weekend for everybody. Remember to give us a follow on Twitter whilst Twitter's still a thing. It's at EFL What The. Will we be moving on to Mastodon? I'm not sure that any of us have got the technological capabilities to master that. So we're there for the time being. And if you want to sponsor the pod, we're still on the hunt for one. Email whattheefl@yahoo.com and we can have a chat about that. All right. First today, we're going to talk news. Thought we'd kick things off with a brief word on some of the FA Cup shocks. Our weekend review will be purely championship based, but there were some pretty embarrassing results for Football League clubs up and down the land. Not least, Adrian, at Cheltenham, Alvechurch. Can't say I've ever heard of them before, but they managed to knock out the Robins.
96 places beneath Cheltenham. So this is
classic
quite
FA Cup talk, that is. Amount of places between them. Love it.
Tick that box off right away. It was, self-inflicted, really. Really poor mistake by the centre-half. Dwelled on the ball, got caught in possession. And I'll tell you what, Waldron, the centre-forward for Alvechurch, had plenty to do, but he skipped forward and scored a wonderful goal. And he was the man that reacted sharpest in the box from a rebound to score the second goal as well. So, yeah, a little bit embarrassing for Cheltenham, this one. I don't think it was a match that they absolutely dominated. It was far more even than it should have been. So, it just heaps the pressure, doesn't it, on them and the manager moving forward.
What about Kings Lynn, Sam? They won at Doncaster. You know the assistant manager of Kings Lynn.
Yeah, one of my best mates, Mark Hughes, survival expert Mark Hughes, who saved Barnett's bacon on a few occasions. good mate of mine, and they went down last year, I think from the National League, but they're top of the National League North, and we exchanged a few texts last week, and he was really confident, and I said to him, Danny Schofield's got them playing some soccer, you know, at Doncaster first couple of games, and he wasn't overawed. They were confident. And looking at the highlights, by far the better side. By far created the clearest chances. It was a long throw and a header at the near post that got the goal. But they played some lovely stuff, it would seem. And Tommy Widrington's the gaffer, who you'll both remember from Southampton. Signed a programme for my brother once upon a time after a cup final played at the Dell. So he's held in high esteem in the Parkin household. But really good victory and deserving, and a little bit of a blow to Danny Schofield, who seemed to got Rovers turning the corner quite quickly.
Yeah, shocking result. Yeah, I was once offered a mega bucks non-league deal at Kings Lynn, which I spurned. Just too far away.
It's confusing geographically, isn't it? Because they're in Norfolk and they play in the National League North.
I think that was the first question I posed to him when they'd been relegated and found themselves in that division. It did throw me a little bit.
Chippenham Town, Clarkie, more like Chippenham away at Mark Kennedy's managerial credibility. They beat Lincoln.
Yeah, and there's another long throw. I think this was a little bit of a pattern across the weekend. You've got to do the basics properly. If you want to avoid a cup upset, you've definitely got to defend corners and long throws properly. And it's such a weapon, isn't it, in the lower league. And this was a classic one. And from it, the ball sort of dropped down at the guy, Hanks it was, who scored the goal. And he just backheels it into the back of the net. An absolute beauty from him. And yeah, it was... not ideal for Lincoln, that is for sure. But Sam, I think knows more about Chippenham than me.
Yeah, I covered them a few times, actually. They won a league title a few seasons ago. So I've been down to Harden Hewish Park, and there is the biggest slope you've ever seen on that pitch. And the goal was actually scored up the hill, and Lincoln actually peppered Chippenham's goal in the second half up the hill as well. So you didn't get to glimpse too much of the other end, where the ball just seems to run out of play copious amounts of times. It's unbelievable. But they've not necessarily been that competitive in the FA Cup, but they've had some recent success, the old Bluebirds. And they often have players on loan from Swindon as well. So a team that I've heard quite a lot about, and I'm really glad they've had their day in the sun.
Uphill or downhill? What's the better way on a slopey pitch?
As a very slow striker, probably up the hill for me.
always up the hill. Everyone thinks, oh yeah, let's kick down. We're going to score loads of goals, but it's harder playing down.
What? Because it's harder to control the ball and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for what Sam said. Those through balls just run away and it's annoying. But you can clip balls in behind and up the hill and still get there. It's in a football match, you run as much going one way as you do the other. So it's not more tiring.
Hat tips as well, by the way, to Grimsby, who beat Plymouth 5-1, and Farnborough, who won 2-0 away at Sutton. I think the feel-good story of the weekend in the FA Cup, though, Clarkie, was the fact that those YouTube stars, the Sidemen, didn't even make the bench for Crawley in their 4-1 home defeat to Accrington in the end. So we can put that behind us now, can we, and move on?
Definitely, yeah. No, football injustice has been done.
Let's talk some managerial movements then. Alex Morris has stepped down as manager of Crewe Alexandra to become assistant at his request for compassionate reasons. He suffered a bereavement, so Lee Bell becomes the interim. It means that 7 of the 24 clubs in League 2 have now changed their manager since the season started in July. Clarkie, I think he deserves praise, doesn't he, Alex Morris, for admitting's the wrong word, but talking about the reasons why he doesn't feel he can carry on in the current role, but wanting to keep going.
Yeah, you can check it out online. Crewe Alexandra tweeted out a video interviewing Alex, and he very calmly explained why. It was quite emotional, actually, watching it. I don't know who it was that sadly passed away, but it was a close family member. And he said that it wasn't sudden, and that it had been a little while ago, but it has affected him, and it's affected his ability to throw himself into what is an absolutely all-consuming job. I think we all accept that, don't we? Being a manager, he's 24/7, and he hasn't been able to devote that time because emotionally him and his family members have been struggling. So he said, look, I can do the number two job where it requires a slightly different work model. And he said he used the phrase heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to step aside from being a first team manager of this club. I wanted this job, but for the greater good, he's made that call, and well done to him for it. Obviously, we saw Darryl Clark step aside, albeit temporarily, last season, and he came back, and there was a real good feel-good story at the end. Maybe we'll see something like that, Crewe.
While we're talking managers, Sam, this is absolute folly on a podcast with a developing story. But Nathan Jones to Southampton is picking up steam. John Percy, The Telegraph, says Southampton are in advanced talks with Luton to appoint Nathan Jones as their new head coach. He clearly feels he's got unfinished business with teams who play in red and white stripes. And his name begins with S, right? This is his justification for leaving Luton, where he has told us so many times, he's the man for the job. It's part of him, etc.
I'd be very be very careful with the move I make if I was Nathan Jones, given what went before, but the type of salary that he can command here, it's night and day. It's night and day. It really is. You know, Luton has been brilliant for him, and I'd really be concerned about them, their chances of maintaining their form at the moment and potentially getting in the playoffs once more in the Championship would be a big worry for me. But for him, it would, of course, be a no-brainer going to the Premier League, the resources that they've had there. Be interesting to see if he takes everyone from Luton, if the likes of Chris Cohen, Alan Sheehan, these guys, very much in the infancy of their coaching careers, if they'd be ready for that step. And also, would he garner the respect of the players at Southampton? In terms of a Premier League job, maybe that would be easier than some of the other ones that may become available. It might be not the biggest step in the world. So we'll see. He deserves his opportunity. There's no doubt about that. He's absolutely transformed Luton over the last few seasons and made them such an incredible unit. A brilliant, brilliant side, punching above their weight consistently. So he deserves his opportunity. I'd be saddened for Luton, but I'd be really interested to see how he gets on, given that it didn't go too well at Stoke.
Yeah, will he burn a table tennis table to get the players' attention like he did at Luton? We'll wait and see. But he's got to do it, Clarkie, hasn't he? I think Sam makes an interesting point there about the backroom staff, because Southampton actually sacked a load of the backroom staff before the start of this season, didn't they? And brought in other people sort of without Ralph Hasenhüttl's blessing, it seems. So you'd think that they might be keen on keeping them. So maybe that might prove to be a sticking point in the negotiation.
It could be. Yeah, he can't say no to it. That is for sure. You just can't. Opportunities like this to manage in the Premier League don't come around very often. They may never come around again for him. And like you say, he'll be weighed in massively in terms of his salary. But yeah, no, you make a good point. Would he be prepared to take the job working with other coaches? I think he probably still would, because of the nature of it being Premier League. And let's be honest, he is very much a hands-on coach himself. So he would still lead, I would imagine, on everything if he did make that move to Southampton. He'd do it with a heavy heart because he loves Luton. He genuinely loves Luton. But you can't snub that. No chance.
We shall see. Maybe you already know, listener, whether he's taking it or not. Big job for Luton to replace him if he does go, though. Okay, next today is the Weekend Review Championship Special. So no games in League One or League Two this weekend because of the FA Cup. So we're going to focus on more Championship games than we normally would. But we've got to start with Sheffield United 5, Burnley 2. Incredible second half performance from the Blades here. Burnley's defence looking pretty breachable, I would say. They were 5 points clear at the top of the league at kickoff. That's been cut to 2 now. They went ahead, Sam, and then it kind of all fell apart in the second half.
Yeah, I'm going to tell a little anecdote to kick off here, Matt. I did a little preview, FA Cup EFL preview on 5 Live on Saturday, and the game was going on at the time. Unknown to me, Charlie Adam was in the studio, is working at Burnley with the young players, with the loan players. So I went into a big monologue about how impressed I've been with them, especially defensively, because I thought that was going to be their Achilles heel, basically in the background as goals rained in at Bramall Lane. So I was saying, you know, the average age of the back five is this, and blah, 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 blah. I thought that it was going to be what people highlighted to be their weakness. And it hasn't been evident really to me in recent weeks and months. Now, that was 16 games unbeaten going into that game. But of course, Sheffield United highlighted it as being an avenue. And in that second half, it was just unrelenting, wasn't it? The physicality. I mean, McBurney, how good's he in the air all of a sudden? It's incredible. And I wanted to highlight him, obviously, because he's the star right now, him and Ndjai. But 15 touches in the opposition box, 11 shots. I don't think I mustered 11 shots in some season, which is unbelievable. 7 on the target. So yeah, him and Ndjai rightly getting, you know, a lot of plaudits, but it was that delivery into the box, the set pieces, the physicality of the defensive players as well who come forward to attack it. Ahmed Hodzic, I mean, I've talked him up no end, haven't I, this season, again, getting a goal and just such a pest. Their win percentage with him starting, 75%, without him, 14%. So he is clearly making an enormous difference. But that said, brilliant as it was from Sheffield United in the second half, brilliant as the last 3 weeks have been for them in particular, I wouldn't be too concerned if I was a Burnley supporter. The concerning thing is if they don't learn from this, if they don't improve on the training ground. Vincent Kompany summed it up really well. Maybe it's a bit of a wake-up call. They have to be balanced because they've been magnificent the last few weeks.
Clarkie, just on Ndjai and McBurney, we often talk, don't we, about how if you've got a striker who can score goals, you'll be right up there in this league. But if you've got two who are currently, you know, amongst a pack of joint top scorers, you ought to get promoted if they can maintain this.
I think so, yeah. They're standout, aren't they? They are the number one and two strikers at the club. I mean, it's harsh on Billy Sharp, who's been brilliant for them, but it's a combination that clicks. On Burnley very quickly, I think that first concession from the corner is one that they'll have to look back on and maybe work on their prep, because the way that they set it up with a 4v3 with three players effectively blocking the three-man markers for McBurney just to have a free header was criminal on Burnley's part. So Clarkie, yeah, they've got to work on that.
Just so we don't get copious amounts of Burnley fans texting in, tweeting in, because we know how wild our social media goes after we tweet out the show. That was never a corner. Did you see
that?
No,
you're right, yeah.
It was never a corner. And when the goal went in, I just looked at the Burnley support and they were giving the referee's assistant bucket loads because it was a terrible decision.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah,
right. Everyone on that pitch knew that it ricocheted off the Sheffield United lad. So listen, United deserved the victory. Of course they did, but that was a really soft way to get back into the game.
Speaking of deserved victories, this is how I'm going to segue into Stoke 1, Birmingham 2. Clarke, they're really defying pre-season expectations, aren't they, Birmingham? And when we had Ian Danter on, we were talking about John Eustace and what a great job he's done. But this is a magnificent start to the season for them, isn't it? Because we had them nailed on for relegation, I think.
My producer on one of the shows that I do at Arsenal is a massive Birmingham fan, and he had them down to finish 24th at the start of this season. He was absolutely, you know, couldn't see the light, basically. But so he's delighted. We all Birmingham City fans are. I mean, the defensive record is amazing. Just 15 goals leaked. And it isn't just about the back three, even though I do think that they've got a good unit now with Sanderson, Dean and Trusty. There's a good balance there. They work ever so hard as a team. The midfield for me is the difference maker. I think Bielik, we know about his ability to break up play. You've got Hannibal in there. Now, Hannibal, he just doesn't stop running. He's absolutely tireless, covers so much ground, but he's also got a bit about him on the ball, can run with it, can pass well. And we saw for the goal from the corner, he's got great technique as well. He drilled that corner. Now, I used to take corners, and to drive it with your sort of instep into the 6-yard box takes a little bit of balls, really. It does, because it can easily go wrong, that kind of delivery. But he took out the goalkeeper, Bursic, and it was, yeah, that was the game-changing moment. So Birmingham, without the ball, excellent. They're not that pretty under John Eustace, really. They're quite direct. In this game, they had a 54% pass accuracy, which, I mean, almost one in two passes went astray, which goes to show they kind of played to the conditions, which were poor, and went a little bit direct. But it was impressive from them. Chong and Deeney were also left out of the side, two stars of the team, I think, because John Eustace recognised that this was going to be a scrap of a match, and he wanted Jukovic in there, and he wanted a couple of other players in too. So yeah, well played Birmingham. But for Stoke, home form was shocking.
Alex Neil wishing he'd stayed at Sunderland. Maybe
Maybe he's not been able to put a strong imprint on the team yet, has he? And even he said in the wake of this game, maybe we should change tactics. Maybe we should stop playing football out from the back, because that's how the first goal happened. Really slow, sluggish passing between the centre halves. Jagielka takes too long. Hogan robs him. Bang, they score the goal. And he's saying, well, these kind of things keep happening. Do I have to change tack? Do we have to just start booming it and playing the percentage game? So that's not a great sign, is it, that a manager is willing to move away from what he wants to play because the players aren't delivering what he needs. So, yeah, tough times. They're only 2 points off the drop zone, Stoke. So they can't consider themselves out of a relegation battle. The only positive in a pretty grey day was Harry Suter, was back on the bench. So he'll make a difference, I think, for them moving forwards.
Funny, isn't it? How often we talk about the massive advantage relegated teams have because of the parachute payment money. It doesn't seem to have done Stoke much good. Let's head back to the top of the table. Blackburn earned a narrow 1-0 win against bottom side Huddersfield at Ewood Park. Blackburn on their best run of form at home since 1996. They've won 8 of 10 in front of their own supporters this season. Ben Brereton-Diaz with the only goal of the game, his 9th of the season here. Sam, he's been linked with lots of clubs. He'll be linked again in January. He's not going to the World Cup, but given the position that they're in, they've got to hold on to him, haven't they, and have a go at getting promoted, which is much more likely with him still at the club than not.
It's the only way they'll get promoted, I would say. So yeah, we had this same conversation a year ago, and he didn't jump ship, did he? So if they've got the potential to go better than they did last year, maybe he'll stick around again. I don't think they will. I mean, some of these statistics are just incredible. We know it's like win, lose, or it has been until this recent spate of victories. So credit them for that. And obviously the home record, as you said, the best record now in terms of points return in the division. I just found this morning, and it's probably old news, but they've scored first 12 times and won all 12 games, and they've conceded first 8 times and lost all 8, and they've won 8 games by the odd goal. So they're clearly very good at defending Leeds, whether this is going to be sustainable against the better sides in the division, I don't think it is. You look at some of the further statistics, they're 23rd for expected goals. Again, this is sometimes down to the state of the game. They're obviously sitting in and conceding territory and conceding chances, but I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain it, especially as Brereton Diaz is their only real consistent goal threat. So I'd be more concerned about probably the goals for, even though I don't think they're going to sustain this brilliant defensive record, because you think of Gallagher, you think of Dak, who's very much out of favour now, looks like he could be on the way out, Smodix, Dolan, there's not going to be players who give them a great return of goals. And then the other kind of options in attack are kids, and they've got a lot of young players in that side, and they've done very, very well, I think, to get themselves into the position they did last season and this season. But I think we just have to temper the expectation with Blackburn right now, because I'm not sure, as those statistics show you, it's going to be sustainable.
Do you think Huddersfield might be thinking about appointing a third manager of the season, or am I being a bit harsh? I'm just looking at their recent results, back-to-back defeats. They failed to score in 4 of the last 5 games. It's not been a great start, to put it mildly.
I'm not joking. I think I checked yesterday that Huddersfield, I'd heard it right, that they were bottom of the table. And I've just checked again now when you've said it. I can't, that's just crept up on me. I didn't think they'd been that bad this season, but
they're adrift as well in what's a really congested bottom end. They're sort of adrift, aren't they?
It's 6 unbelievable.
From safety.
Clearly scoring goals is the massive issue at the moment. I remember Clarkie speaking about there was at the victory over Millwall relatively recently, where we were very conservative, and Gary Rowett was, really nice about them post-match in terms of how difficult they were to break down, but they just can't score goals. And when I think back to last year, I didn't think there was an abundance of creativity. I think some individuals had outstanding seasons, and given that they've lost not one but 2 managers, I think they're probably just a little bit, they've lost focus a little bit, and probably going to find it very difficult to replicate that form. So many players just had unbelievable seasons last year. It's going to be a challenge, but it can't lie on Mark Fotheringham's door just yet. We need to give him a little bit of time to see if he can turn things around. But yeah, 1 goal scored in 5 games. Only Cardiff and Preston scored fewer. So that's clearly where they need to improve.
Managers that I'm labelling under pressure. Let's continue with that theme and talk about Norwich and Dean Smith. They actually won at Rotherham, but are Canaries fans happy with that? Seems many would rather a change in the dugout, despite them moving up to 4th in the table after a 3rd game unbeaten for Rotherham. This was a 3rd straight loss. Clarkie, do you want to talk about the game first, or that bloke who gave his jumper to Wes Harding to dry off the ball for a throw?
It was good, wasn't it? It was a good little video. Yeah, selfless gesture. You love to see it. Yeah, the obsession though with towels and drying the ball, I don't know, it drives me mad.
Didn't happen before Rory de Lapp, did it? It just didn't happen.
But yeah, fair play. It was very good of him. Yeah, Dean Smith is a strange one. Norwich fans aren't happy with him. They don't think he's really improved the team. I think from a tactical point of view, they haven't got that clear identity that they had under Farker and previous managers. Certainly the free-flowing football isn't there. Look at the possession stats with Norwich. When you think of the Canaries, it's all about neat little triangles, moving the ball between the lines, dominating opponents at this level. Well, 4 of the last 5 games have seen them have less than 50% of possession. And unbelievably, they only had 48% of the ball against Rotherham, which I don't think anyone would have predicted. So it goes to show that they're not playing with confidence. They're not that assured in possession at the moment. And the reason they won this game, it's because they stuck in there. They showed resilience at the back because there was a lot of pressure late on from Rotherham. But mainly it's because 2 of their players followed in and anticipated a half chance. And that's the only reason that they won. Look at both the goals. Kenny McLean for the first one just wanders towards the far stick, just hoping that a deflection might go his way. It did. And then as my phone goes off, I'll just decline that.
Is that Nathan Jones?
It's not Nathan Jones. So that was 1 goal. And the other one for Aaron Ramsey, again, he just follows in a rebound, doesn't he? It's basics, basically, that got Norwich over the line in this match. I think they're missing Omar Bamidele, who I bigged up recently in that scouting report. Max Aarons, that's an interesting one. Always a fixture in Norwich's team. He's been dropped the the last two games. He got a recall for this one, and he played quite a big part in that first goal. So maybe for Max Aarons, he's had that little bit of a wake-up call as well. But yeah, Norwich are okay, but they probably should be doing a little bit better with the players that they've got at their disposal. One player on the rise is obviously Aaron Ramsey. He's only 19, 3 goals and 3 assists for him now this season, which isn't too bad, isn't too shabby, is it?
If he keeps going at that rate, we won't have to put the caveat of not that one after his name every time we say Aaron Ramsey. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Ollie Rathbone's equaliser, because we were talking about the ball getting stuck in the stanchion last week. I just love when a ball rolls all the way around the net from one side or the other, like it did with his, along the ground. I think aesthetically
it's just beauty. Just a quickie, you're absolutely bang on. Just a quickie on Rotherham, they've not really got any players left. I think they had 3 players come off with injuries in this one. Wood carried on with a problem. They were already without their 2 first-choice wing-backs. Then they've got Sheffield Sheffield United the next game. They're struggling to put an 11 out.
Should they have had a pen at the end for that challenge on Benny?
Not in my opinion, no.
Fair. All right, I agree with you. Friday night in Berkshire. Sam, what a way for you to kick off your weekend. You were there live to see Preston win 2-1 at Reading. Preston have got the best away record in the league. All the goals in the second half. Did they deserve the victory?
Just about. It took me about 5 minutes. Obviously, I've read a lot, watched a lot of highlights, but seeing them in the flesh, took me about 5 minutes to realise why they've had this incredibly dull, strange, peculiar start to the season. It was just so evident. I was just watching them just thinking, blimey, they're very well organised. Blimey, they're never going to score tonight. I could nod off.
Can I confess, right? I watched this game on my own in the sort of spare room. I thought, I'm going to take this game in. I nodded off early second half. I woke up after the final whistle when my wife came in. And I think I missed the best bits, didn't I? Because the first half was so bad, so low on quality.
Both of you, I presume you to have been to Reading. I mean, you get a brilliant view from the gantry. And honestly, I'm not just saying it for the people I was working for or whatever, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed being there, the tactical, same systems, both teams. And I'm thinking, this could just peter out to a 0-0. We might not even get a shot. Or does one of the managers, do they take the handbrake off and do something positive? Do they try and go and win this game? Obviously, history this season would show you that Preston are quite content to take away 0-0s or whatever from games. But I felt that was going to be the deciding factor. It was going to be a substitute, or it was going to be a tactical tweak. And in the end, it was probably the best creative player on display, Robbie Brady, who had the only 2 moments in the first half of any note, who put in a brilliant delivery. Ched Evans scores, hadn't scored for 30 plus games or whatever, and immediately looks like a striker. He's been getting a bit of flack, I think, hasn't played well up until the previous game. And his hold-up play was immaculate. He was strong. He was backing in. He was linking it. And then he scored a brilliant second goal after Reading had equalised. I mean, that's the biggest surprise of the night. When Preston went 1-0 up, I started packing up. I took my headphones off. I never in a million years did I think Reading were going to score. They were abject. They really were, especially the front two, Carroll and Mate. I mean, that's not a front two he can persist with, I don't think, on that note. They were so, so bad. But they managed to equalise when Jao came on. He made a big difference just because he can get hold of the ball. People can get around him. They were able to work the ball into the final third. He's a difficult customer to play up against. Jao, strong, good feet, nimble. So they were slightly better, got the penalty. And you think, there we go, that's probably going to be 1-1. But Ched Evans, given the renewed confidence, scores a brilliant second goal. Brilliant second goal. McIntyre was really slow to close him down. Great decision, and then brilliant execution to take the strike on and find the far corner. So yeah, Brady and Ched Evans, the difference, I think. But yeah, I don't think Preston can maintain this. I really don't. There's a bit of a lack of creativity there, despite how good they are defensively, which is remarkably good.
Yeah, they are up to 6th in the table. 3 wins in a row, 4 from 5 for them. Reading only 1 win in 8, and that Lucas Schwau penalty was one of only 2 shots on target that they managed in the game. Right, Clarky, let's finish at Vicarage Road, and let's not make a joke about Slaven Bilic getting sacked, even though Watford lost 1-0 to Coventry here. I want to talk more about Coventry. We like lavishing praise on Mark Robbins on this podcast, but it's what? Successive wins for only the second time this season for them. They've won three away from home in a row. Given all the noise that's going on with stuff happening off the pitch and in some cases regarding the pitch as well, they're doing really well, aren't they? They've got a good manager, good coaching team and some decent players.
Yeah, there's so much going on in the background, but Mark Robbins and the coaches have kept their eye on the ball and they've kept that confidence, because it would have been easy for them to lose belief in themselves, in what their manager was telling them, because it was a shocking start to the season, wasn't it? Obviously, six of their opening seven games were away from home and they struggled. They didn't get good results, but they've fixed it. They've learned from it. They've actually had a lot of practice on the road, haven't they? Away from the CBS Arena. And they've found a formula now. And three draws away from home have now been followed by three wins away from home. Clean sheets are plenty. And in this match, it was just good organisation, as Sam's just talking about with Preston. Yeah, good organisation and danger on the counter-attack. It was a really nice goal. Loved the way that Jokeres got away from Troost Ekon, who had a bit of a mare. I think he really struggled to handle Jokeres. Poor defending there. But yeah, they took their chance and then they rode their luck. It was a miss of the season, wasn't it, from Ismail Assar? I mean, that was a shocker. Even Parkin would have knocked that one in.
Blame the pace of the cross? Is that going to be his get out there? Like, oh, it's just coming at me so fast, I couldn't take the pace off.
I don't know. Sam's got a better idea than me on those sort of 6 yard box efforts, you know, flashed across the face of goal. I mean, are they easily missed, Sam? I didn't have many of those.
I haven't got an answer, I don't think. It's terrible, isn't it? Seeing it late, maybe. Seeing it late and just having to adjust at the last minute. I saw one yesterday in the game I covered that we'll come on to. But yeah, that was it was dreadful, wasn't it? To clear the bar by that distance and get so much power on it, you'd think surely you'd be able to keep it under the bar.
Yeah, it was. But going back to Coventry, they gave a first start to Jack Burrows, Scotland under 21 in an international. He's been on loan north of the border. He's come back. He's had to wait for his chance. Came in and did really well at wing back. Not easy, because he had to mark Ken Semmer early on. Then he switched him to the other side, and he had to mark Ismail Assar. So not the easiest of first starts at Championship level, but he got through it. It was just one of those days, I think, for Watford. No need to think of it as a crisis. They've been more set of late with the team selection. I'm not sure I love inverted wingers with Semmer on the right and Saar on the left, but that's the way they're going at the moment. And yeah, they had enough chances to win or at least draw Watford. It just wasn't their day.
Look up if he was David Burrows' son as well?
I looked at the spelling of his name and saw that they were different.
Good. Okay. David Burrows lives in France now.
Okay, I can top that. I've got a signed Liverpool programme from 1990 by David Burrows, because my auntie is mates with his maybe still wife. Who knows? Dig that out of the loft somewhere, stick it on eBay. That'll do for the weekend review. Next today, another familiar face runs the gauntlet that is the Fit and Proper guest test. Taking the Fit and Proper guest test this week is the former Darlington, Barnsley, Lincoln and Moore goalkeeper turned pundit, turned coach, turned pundit again, David Preece. David, you're a busy man. You left Sunderland in the summer. What have you been up to since then?
Well, obviously, you've been doing a little bit of this, a little bit of core comms for BBC for a lot of League One games. I was invited away with the Northern Ireland 21s with John Schofield. That was great experience as well. And obviously just prepare myself to get back into coaching again once the right opportunity comes along.
Yeah, because last time we spoke to you was after the playoff final. At that point, we had a paid job podcasting on the Football League and you had your dream job. So what happened? You left Sunderland in the summer.
Yeah, it was just a situation that I think we had 3 weeks break from the playoff final to the start of pre-season. And then myself and Phil Jevons, who was also part of the coaching staff with Lee Johnson, who was the manager previous to Alex Neil, of course. Yeah, we both just got pulled in there for pre-season and told we're going to go in a different direction. And I think the old phrase is, that's just football.
So, and without wanting to read between the lines or make two and two add five, maybe that had something to do with Alex Neil leaving too, if the club are kind of making decisions about his staff on his behalf, or do you think that wasn't really a factor in that?
I mean, when I first came to the club, it was a case of that. They were always going to be the manager would come in with his assistants, as happened with Lee Johnson, Jim McAllister, then Alex Neil and Martin Cannon. And the rest of the staff would be club appointments. And it was, like I said, it was a little bit of a shock to myself and Phil. At the same time, you know what football's like. We could have easily both left when Lee Johnson left the club as well. And it could have been a clean sweep then. So part of it is just, yeah, glad that myself and Phil Jevons were able to continue the season, and which obviously resulted in a great day at Wembley for everyone at the club and all the fans. And then said tinged with a bit of disappointment 3 weeks later when when we told they're going a different direction.
But presumably you're experienced enough, you've had enough bumps and bruises in football for it not to sour you on the fact that you got to work for your club, and you know, you're effectively your last day at work was at Wembley.
Yeah, I mean it is a massive bonus, and if you're going to leave any club, no matter whether it's your home club or not, it's probably the best year that the club's had in since probably 1973. You know, a lot of people said that. Certainly it's the best day I've ever had as a Sunderland supporter, never mind as a coach. And just looking to me right now at the back of my kitchen door, I've got there's a gold medal hanging on the back of it, which I received last week in the post, which is the playoff finals winner's medal. So it was, of course, it was disappointing to leave, but what a season to leave on.
Mm. And I know you like doing your media work, but you want to get back into coaching somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the right opportunity. I think I've had a couple of opportunities to get back into it. They just weren't right. It was probably just the right decision just to take a little bit of time, not to rush into anything. And I know that these jobs don't grow on trees. You know, if I want to be head of goalkeeping or goalkeeping coach at a football league club, Premier League club, there's 92 jobs out there. So you've got to be patient. And like I said, I'm preparing myself, getting myself ready to make sure that I'm ready when that opportunity comes up.
So you've been watching lots of games this season. Obviously, you were very well versed in League One last term. Who stands out for you at the moment, goalkeeping-wise, in the EFL?
If I was to give you I don't know if it would be top three, but certainly the three that's really catching my eye. At first, technically, he's not an EFL goalkeeper, but he's on loan at Lincoln City from Brighton. It's called Rushworth. I've seen a lot of Lincoln games this season. And the last few seasons, they've done very well in the loan market, bringing in the likes of Alex Palmer, Josh Griffiths and Carl Rushworth this season. And I knew a little bit about Carl before he came to Lincoln, and just watching him, he's very young. I think he's still 19, 20 years old. But he's a real calming influence on the side for such a young keeper, and so consistent with everything that he does. And I was watching a game the other week when they played Sheffield Wednesday, and he tried to clip the ball up to the fullback. It got intercepted. The ball got played to Lee Gregory. Finished it. Young goalkeepers, that's going to happen. You know, he's very good with his feet. But one thing you did notice, it didn't affect him at all. And that's a real mark of a great maturity for such a young goalkeeper. And I've been really impressed with the way that he's playing. Another one that division is probably known to more people is Michael Cooper at Plymouth. I'm actually surprised that he's there this season. A great first couple of seasons at Argyle. And he's another one who's so consistent with everything he does. Makes big saves, great one-on-one situations. And again, old head on young shoulders, and I fully expect him to play at a higher level, whether it's with Argyle, as it could be. They look like they're going to make a promotion challenge this season, or that somebody, a bigger club's going to take them. And the one that really stands out for me, and I might be biased about this because I've seen a lot of them work with him, is Anthony Patterson at Sunderland. Don't think there's a better keeper in the Championship this season, really. Certainly not of somebody of his age. There's a lot of talk about in the summer about, you know, could he make a step up? How would he do it fair in the Championship? And he's took it like a duck to water. Really, nothing phases him. From he's 22 years old now, and from sort of making his league debut last season to going out on loan at Notts County and then coming back, being recalled, going back to Notts County, being recalled again. Yeah, it was such a turbulent season. He just handled it so well. And then made a huge, huge save. The big contribution coming to it crosses at Wembley. That Ross Stewart, obviously, and Elliot Embleton get all the headlines. But really, the couple of chances that Wickham did have in that game, he snuffed them out and made sure that the result went our way.
Adrian and Sam have got a couple of questions for you. They want to know, first of all, we're talking about best goalkeepers. Who was your favourite goalkeeping coach to work under in your playing days? Or who do you think improved you the most?
Do you know what? I was influenced by so many goalkeeping coaches along the way. And I think the first big one was Jimmy Montgomery at Sunderland.
Very famous name in the club's history, of course.
Yeah, remarkable double save in the 73 Cup final, one of the best saves ever in my book. And I was lucky that when I joined the club, that he became not only my youth, he was a joint youth coach. It was him and George Herb were joint coaches of the youth team at that time. But also he became the goalkeeping coach as well. And then when I left Sunderland and joined Darlington, the manager, David Hodgson, just said to me, says, you know, we need a goalkeeping coach, you know, if anybody you work with. I was like, I want Monty. And he was just so good for me, you know, just not just in the way that he worked, but I think I was a kind of a similar goalkeeper to him. Quick feet, really quick reactions. And he recognised that. And, you know, we worked on my game a lot. And he was probably the first one where I really, you know, worked one-to-one with somebody. Last season at Sunderland, he was always around the club. I always want them to invite him in to make sure that he's around the club and included, because he's still an ambassador for the club. We've got an ambassadorial role at the club. Yeah, he'd quite often come in and watch training sessions and tell me where I was going wrong, what I was doing. Nothing ever changes, really. I might have been 25 years ago, nearly 30 years ago, but he's still a real real good influence on me. And even as a coach, as you get old, I'm 46 now, you know, sometimes it's great to have that sort of guidance and guiding figure behind you. So it was, probably he was my first one. That was a real big influence on me. But other ones were Jim Leighton at Aberdeen. And when I first went there, we were both vying for the number one shirt. He was coming towards his end of his career. He was 39, 40. But from the moment I stepped through the door, he was just so supportive. Even though I was in the team to begin with and came out through injury and he finished the rest of the season. Yeah, he was just so supportive. And, you know, it didn't feel like a rivalry. Then he ended up being the coach. And again, regardless of what his influence on the pitch it was, which was great, his biggest influence was probably off the pitch. Through going through tough times, through being injured and being out the side, he always went knew, you know, exactly what I needed. And there was days probably when I needed a bit of a kick up the backside and I got that. But also there was times when he'd actually, if the team was having a bad time and whoever was in goal was maybe under a bit of pressure, sometimes he'd just say to the manager, look, I'm going to take him down to the beach and train on the sand, which we often did at Aberdeen when the pitches were frozen. And then we'd go down the beach, we'd take a few balls with us in the car, leave the balls in the car, and then we'd go into a cafe called the Inversnecky. We'd have a big full Scottish breakfast and a Coke float, and then just chat about what was going on, and it kind of just eases the pressure a little bit. Sometimes that was exactly what was needed.
Younger listeners, you really missed out with Coke floats. They don't do them anymore, but it's a glass of Coke with vanilla ice cream in it. It's absolutely amazing. That leads me nicely on. You mentioned training there. Sam wanted to know, what did you used to do when strikers tried to chip you in training? Like, are you catching it and scolding them? Are you booting the ball 100 yards away and say, get after that?
Most of the time, I do you know what? I would normally accept it from a player who could do it in the game. So if they were likely to try it in a game or they were capable of doing it in a game under pressure, no problem with it. I'd give them a round of applause. If it's a big, hairy centre-half who's never done it in his life and he tries it once and it comes off, he's getting a boot straight back in his head, no problem at all.
Quite right, too. Right, you know, we always finish with a super serious question. This is one that came to me this morning. So you lived in Denmark and Sweden. Did you ever have Stett Flask? Apparently the national dish of Denmark. It sounds absolutely delicious.
Yeah. And do you know what? The best time of the year was always just after the start of the mid-season break. So, but it's still traditional season in Denmark, but there's a big split. There's normally a 2-month split in the season. So around the end of November, you play your last game. And then you have a week where there's annual awards, players, you know, award ceremonies and things like that, and sponsors dinners. And that's what the start of the Christmas, sort of the festival season in Denmark. And every time you went to dinner, there was always these big feasts, big Christmas feasts. And the steak flesk was always a big part of it. And it was all, like, it's beautifully done.
It's just like pork, right? Fried pork.
I think it's roasted and fried. I'm no chef, so, but it like lovely pork crackling on it. It was absolutely beautiful. But the rest of it was absolutely one of the big parts, big bonuses got in Denmark was the food, definitely.
All right. We'll see you as goalkeeping coach at AGF Aarhus before too long then. In case, David, thank you so much for your time today. We normally ask Sam and Adrian at this point if the guest has passed the fit and proper guest test, but they're not here, so I'm just going to give you an A grade and say thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Many thanks to David Priest for joining me for that. We're going to move on to our scouting report. Okay, Sam, you're going first, and we are having a little riff on the theme here because you're going to give us an overview of Cambridge, which to me sounds like a Channel 5 travel show, but you saw them at close quarters this weekend and you weren't particularly impressed, I think it's fair.
You got the big game, didn't you? Curzon Ashton v Cambridge.
Yeah, well, that, it had 1-0 Curzon Ashton written all over it. We got the rain. We had the big, muscular centre-forward. He just didn't arrive in the 84th minute, like I preempted from a set piece. It's a struggle at the moment. I think I would imagine one of Mark Bonner's strengths is not getting too carried away and not getting too despondent when they get beaten, because they get beaten quite heavily on occasion. But this is a worry at the moment. Last 10 games, joint fewest points with Forest Green, 6, and scored the fewest goals. And that's my biggest worry about Cambridge right now. You remember Ironside and Mullen's wonderful partnership. He plays the one up now. He plays Sam Smith wide in a role on the right-hand side. He hasn't scored since the end of August. Ironside's 1-9. And yesterday against National League North opponents, yeah, lacked creativity. Don't think Ironside had a shot. Harvey Nibbs got all the opportunities. They all seem to fall to him. He's got 4 goals this season. He played as a 10, but he really lacked composure in the final third. And when they did change and made some substitutions after an hour, 65 minutes, he brought on Shiloh Tracy on one side and Jack Lancaster on the other side. And immediately they looked like a completely different proposition. So whether they were left out, looking at their appearances this season, it doesn't look like that. I don't think they've probably been part of the first team too often. It's definite food for thought for the manager, because they created the 2 best chances of the game, one for Nibbs and one for a young lad called Lewis Simper, who I wanted to talk about as well. 21 years old midfield player. He'll remember yesterday for wasting the best opportunity, but I was really impressed with him. Left-footed, steady midfield player, played forward, looked to have real nice ability, and getting an opportunity for the first time, really, a run of games and some big games as well at that. Played in the derby at Peterborough, played against Wickham during their last victory. So he was one positive that I saw for them last night. But I think for Mark Bonner, it's just finding a little bit more creativity, trying to find some more goals. Because defensively, I looked at that as well, they're pretty much the same as they were this stage last season. Sorry, they're pretty much the same as they were throughout last season. Conceded 1.6 per game last season, slightly up, but marginally this campaign. So it's just trying to find a few more goals, and I'm sure they'll be able to pull themselves away from what is quite a difficult and dangerous position that they're in currently.
Yeah, back-to-back home games against Bolton and Accrington Stanley next up for them. Clarkie, you want to talk about Giovanni Brown of Exeter City. Are you throwing it back to his glorious 19 goals in 19 league games loan spell at St Neots Town back in 2016-17, or are we talking a bit more recent than that?
Let's go a bit more recent. This is a guy, remember, that had 1 goal before Christmas last season. Unbelievably barren run, but he kept his place, or he kept the faith of the manager because of his contributions to the team. And in the end last season, he ended with 7 goals and 12 assists. Well, this season, he's got 8 goals and 7 assists already. That's the top. He's top with Aaron Collins in League One for direct goal contributions. So it's very, very impressive from him at the start of this season. I'd give him even more credit because he's had to move positions. He started the campaign as one of a front two. Jay Stansfield's arrival has meant that they've accommodated him in the sort of number 10 role in a 4-3-1-2. And he's taken to that very, very well indeed. So I've looked at all of his goals. I've looked at all of his assists. Giovanni Brown has got a very, very good left foot. Absolutely stonking left foot. 4 penalties, he slotted into the bottom corner, no bother. And I don't know whether I've seen a player, certainly at that level, look more comfortable running onto cutbacks than Giovanni Brown. A lot of his goals are when a teammate gets to the byline and cuts it back for him, joining in from that number 10 position. One touch, left foot, bottom corner, over and over and over again. He is brilliant at it, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. He's got goals in him from that position, and then assist wise there's a little bit about him. He can play those through balls. He can deliver good set pieces. There were 2 identikit assists that helped his team get 4 points earlier on in the season from corners. Basically, he fizzed it left-footed towards the far stick, and for I think two games in a row they knocked their header in at the far post. So yeah, 8 goals, 7 assists, great left foot. I think he's you know, he's not a youngster, he's 28 years of age, but he's absolutely invaluable to Exeter City, and yeah, wishing the best of luck for the rest of the season. He's having a cracker.
Yep, already scored once more in the league than he did last term. And yeah, running at 1-in-2 goal average in the league this season. So that was Cambridge and Giovanni Brown, the subjects of this week's scouting report. Okay, before we go, tweet of the week. I really love this. I don't know if you had time to look at it yet, Sam and Adrian, but I think this is fabulous work from Isaac Hayden. Maybe a bit of Premier League experience coming into this. This is after Norwich's aforementioned win at Rotherham at the weekend. It's the formality, Sam, which I think it really, really sets this apart from his peers. Typical Championship game today. Was vital we took 3 points, though. He spelt though wrong, but there we go. Everyone gave everything, especially after a hectic schedule. Time to recover and focus on next weekend. Thank you for your support today. Hashtag NCFC. Tagging in at Norwich City FC. I mean, thank you for your support today. What's it about? He's totally befuddled me here. It's so
who was it that got caught out by writing the start of the tweet that his management team had sent him?
Yes.
Who was an that? It was an Ichibi, wasn't it?
And he tweeted something like, yeah.
I'm thinking Isaac Hayden, Premier League for a large portion of the last 5, 6, 7 seasons. Has he got the same team? And is that their working?
Then, because look, how can you spell Championship with a capital C?
Because I don't have that
if you're paying someone to do it.
I don't like it, but I'm, you know, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, how are you recovering, Isaac? Tell me about it. What is the branding of that protein shake you're about to take on? What is the carbohydrate that's getting served up in the little rubbish microwave on the team bus on the way home? Just give me it. Give me more, because that is 2 out of 10 territory. Yeah.
This is dull as dishwater, isn't it? This is a non-tweet, in my opinion, Matt. I think, I mean, if this is tweet of the week,
he's getting destroyed here. So I'm going to caveat it by saying, I think his return is good news for Norwich. Yeah, I think he has been missed. So I think he's going to be the missing piece in the jigsaw, and Norwich are going to be all right probably from now.
You've recovered it there. The Norwich fans are not going to come for you now, Sam.
But I just don't want him to come for me, but it's a stinking tweet.
I think I've got to the bottom of it. You see, I think it's cerebral, and the fact that, you know, he's written it in proper sentences. All right, he spelt the word though wrong and hasn't capitalised Championship. But in Isaac Hayden's bio, which obviously I'm just looking at, he is at Norwich FC football emoji and MSDU_MMU candidate mortarboard emoji. Now, MSD_MMU is the Master of Sport Directorship. So he's a learned fella. Adrian, that's why he's doing this. That's why he's writing in proper sentences. He's trying to impress his lecturers.
Get your capital letters right then, Isaac. You know, that's the first step. No, but Isaac Hayden, as a young player at Arsenal, was very into the media and very well-spoken and always the player that the comms team would put forward for any extra sort of media activities, because he speaks well. So he's got that about him. He's got something about him as a player and off the pitch. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me that. I mean, it's a bit early. I mean, he's not coming towards the end of his career, is he? To be thinking about directorship, but fair play.
Well, I know somebody who planned for life after football whilst they were still playing it, and they're now appearing on a non-award-winning Football League podcast every week. So maybe he's got his head screwed on. Right, anyway. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of this week's show. Not without me reminding you to follow us on Twitter whilst that platform is still alive, and to send an email to whatthefl@yahoo.com if you want to sponsor our podcast so we can keep making them for you. Or you know somebody who does, tell them to get in touch at EFL. What there is the place to go on Twitter, by the way. But yeah, whatthefl@yahoo.com. Give us a rating on your podcast platform of choice if you'd be so kind. That'll help other people find us too. A nice review would be appreciated as well, just for the purposes of boosting our ego. We will be back next week to discuss more matters football league, so we'll catch up with you then. Till then, have a great week. Speak to you soon.